I'm Gregory Berg, and coming up on Monday's morning show, a look at the January 6th insurrection from inside, from the perspective of Julie Farnham, who at the time was Assistant Director of Intelligence for the Capitol Police and who had attempted to sound the alarm for what might occur on that day. Her riveting book is titled Domestic Darkness, an insider's account of the January 6th insurrection and the future of right-wing extremism. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News, and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise. And Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library, who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Hello, you are listening to WGTD's Community Matters. I am your host today, Xander Miller, and speaking with me is Brandy Cummings, the head of Community Programs and Partnerships at Kenosha Public Library. Brandy, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me today, Xander.
Great. So I wanted to bring you on because I wanted to talk about this thing that kind of took over a lot of our Marches and Aprils, and that's the Big Read, the Kenosha Public Library's Big Read. So could you give me a brief overview of what that program was and what your involvement with it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So as head of Community Programs and Partnerships, I have the great privilege of overseeing both adult programming and organizational programming at the Kenosha Public Library. So when we talk about organizational programming, we're talking about things like the NEA Big Read, which falls under a large grant and might include multiple departments or branches and partnerships. So that's why it falls to me. And this was actually my first year getting to plan an NEA Big Read. I've been heavily involved as the marketer for many years, but never really got to be in charge of programming. So yearly, the National Endowment of the Arts releases a grant opportunity for cultural institutions across the United States to apply for a grant from them, partnered with Arts Midwest, that celebrates a different piece of literature. They select about 20 books every year, and communities can apply and select the one that they think would be the best fit for their community.
Okay. And so you mentioned the National Endowment of the Arts. That's sounds like it's a big national org.
Absolutely.
So what is it more that they support when doing these sorts of things, or what do they focus on?
Yeah, so the National Endowment of the Arts has a few different areas of focus, but they're really looking at ways to make arts accessible to everyone in communities across the United States. And they do this primarily through providing grant-funded opportunities for institutions to help celebrate and bring in opportunities to their communities to engage with the community members or institutions' patrons like we would at the library.
Okay. And you mentioned that this is the first year for you to do it, but this seems like, I mean, I've heard about it in this community for a few years, really.
Yeah.
And so this is a repeating program, really.
Absolutely. So this was actually the 10th NEA Big Read that happened here in Kenosha. So we started this 11 years ago. So we did 1 year outside of the actual NEA program. And we've partnered with both UW Parkside and Gateway Technical College. And we've taken turns kind of passing the baton between the institutions to run the program, but always have partnered together to pull off programming and to reach into the community as far as we could.
Yeah, so it's not just like the library is putting this together. It's more of a collaboration, really, between the library, some of the universities, other partners in the community as well?
Absolutely. We usually average between 20 to 40 community partners per NEA Big Read. I think at our largest program, we had 80 community partners, which was quite a feat. But we're looking at everything from our art galleries like Lemon Street and reaching out to our coffee shops. Traditionally, year after year, we would hold a book discussion at Common Grounds. And I was really glad this year that when Anna took over with Anna's by the Lake, that they welcomed us back to continue that tradition. Our local microbreweries get in on the fun and create beers that are specially designed to celebrate the themes of the books. We also see the faith community engaged. KUSD gets in on it, the Kenosha Literacy Council. Really, it's hard to find a partner or an institution here in this community that hasn't touched the Big Read in some place.
Yeah, so it's not about the library, really.
Nope. It's not about the library, but it definitely fits into our mission and values. And so the idea that what we do as a public library is we make ideas and curiosity and discovery low obstacle and accessible to as many people as we can. This sort of programming helps us do that while also actively engaging our talented and passionate community members.
Okay. So this year for the NEA Big Read, what was the book that was selected?
Yeah, so this year we selected Yah Jossie's debut novel, Homegoing, which is a fictional tale that starts in the 1700s when we're looking at slavery being established in the Gold Coast of Africa, which is later known as Ghana. And we follow the lineage of a woman and her two daughters who are half-sisters that don't know each other. And we follow that all the way through to America in the early to mid-2000s, right before the Obama inauguration. So we're crossing a lot of time, a lot of characters, a lot of themes. And it was a really great opportunity to engage such a wide swath of the community.
Okay. And I guess, of course, it was selected by the NEA Big Read Committee, however they do their selection. But how did you, how did the library really decide on this book out of the, I think, 20 or so you mentioned books that were available to select?
Yeah, so each year when we're applying for the NEA grant, our team will get together who's in charge of programming and try to make some preliminary decisions about the books that are on the list, because 20 is quite a lot of books to have to go through. Mm-hmm. And those books include everything from poetry compilations to nonfiction memoirs. There's such a variety. So they narrowed it down to a few choices and talked with some of our leadership here and also reflected on what we were seeing in the community at the time. So when we applied for this grant, it was in 2021, late 21, early 22. I can't remember exactly the date. But we were looking at everything that had happened in our community in 2020 and the civil unrest, but also the growing awareness of the disparities in our community, the growing awareness of the systemic racism and systemic systems that we were seeing. And we know that getting together to discuss these sort of topics through the lens of fiction really allows people to explore and expand their thoughts. So this novel, Homegoing, really provided us the opportunity to not only discuss current events, but also celebrate culture in a really fun and new way for us.
Yeah, I like that, the idea of celebrating culture when it comes to a book, because fiction is sometimes easier than nonfiction, especially.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I know this book in particular was challenging for a lot of folks. Could you talk about that a little more?
Absolutely. So I really think it falls into a few different camps of challenging. One, reading the book itself was hard. So as a debut novel and a debut novelist, Jossie really did a great job developing characters. But each chapter is a different character. And as I mentioned earlier, that time frame is really large. So we're dealing with, changing history pretty rapidly throughout the book. So you're tracking different characters, you're tracking different timelines, and thankfully she provided a beautiful family tree in the beginning of the book that we could all reference throughout, which was really helpful. But also the subject matter was hard to read, not because it was by any way, obscene or but it was upsetting. And it was upsetting because we were so deeply rooted in and caring for these very human characters who are going through undeniable atrocities. While this book is a work of fiction, it's very heavily reflective of what we know to be true about our history and our past. The things that happened during slavery, the things that happened in the civil rights era, the atrocities that continued to happen in America, the prison pipeline. We see all of these things clearly represented in this book. And when you're faced with that, and you're faced with having to reckon with yourself and your own understanding of those times, those history moments, it can be really challenging to process.
And so when you were saying before that you were referencing back to things happening in 2020 in our community, mm-hmm. that with the subject matter of this book was part of that intentionality?
It absolutely was. So the team that wrote the grant was very clear that what they wanted to do was provide the community a time to get together for deliberative dialogue and to really discuss and process everything we'd been through in 2020. And having this novel as a way to explore that, it made it a little bit easier to talk about what maybe we were feeling and the shared experiences we had in a different lens without maybe feeling so intimately tied to that subject matter, but still exploring what the community felt.
Yeah, because this book wasn't directly about police brutality or anything related to police shootings, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, there's not really much involvement of police at all in this book. There's a chapter where we're looking, it was back right before the Fugitive Slave Act was enacted, so we're talking, early 1800s. I think that's the only time we really focus on a police character at all. And what was chilling about it is that even without what we recognize as more of a modern issue, right, when we're talking about police shootings, when we're talking about this sort of civil unrest that we've seen in the wake of, George Floyd and all the other countless men and women who have been injured or killed by police officers, even without talking about that brutality that we face now, we could see it echoed in the stories that Jossie put on paper. Mm-hmm. And we could see that impact that we all felt because we live in a time that also reflects that.
Yeah, I want to now go to from, what the library is aiming to do, the decisions of the library, to the community side. So mm-hmm. how did the community react to this book?
Overwhelmingly positive. However, undeniably, we had hiccups. We definitely had some pushback for the first time in a very long time and the first time ever for NEA Big Read Selection. So again, as we talked earlier about the NEA and who they are in this country and how they really not only help to set standards but champion art and literature, we trust their picking of these titles, right? We trust their selection process. And it's much like you would trust experts in other fields. When we look at consumer reports or reviews, you're looking for people who are well-versed in these areas. And we had some community members this year who felt that some of the scenes depicted in this book were too brutal to read. Some of them felt that they were inappropriate for the library to be exploring or discussing with adults. But a key component of libraries, and specifically public libraries, is that we believe that people have the freedom to choose what to read and the freedom to decide what is appropriate for themselves. And unlike being in a school where you're assigned a book, I'm sure you can remember not too long ago, right? Being assigned to read To Kill a Mockingbird or being assigned to read Catcher in the Rye. This is very different, where you're opting in. You're opting in to read this book. And like we shared earlier, the subject matter wasn't always easy. That doesn't mean that there wasn't great joy and celebration and love oozing out of this book as well. But those hard moments were hard. And I think that if I were to play armchair psychologist for a moment, that the challenges people felt while reading this were less of a reflection of the work of art in front of them and more of a reflection of that internal struggle with reckoning with what it means to live in a society and maybe even benefiting from a society that's been built on the backs of our Black brothers and sisters.
Yeah, that's an interesting point to be making, that the book can work as a reflection, but it can reflect many different things depending on who's looking at it.
Yep.
So how does the library respond when that sort of, you mentioned it was overwhelmingly positive. How does the library respond to those bits of negative pushback?
Yeah, carefully and with great care. I think something that many people don't know is that public libraries have a Bill of Rights. and it's something that all public libraries, you know, we ratify, we believe in. It's part of the American Library Association. It's part of what's taught in schools when people get their master's in library science. And it upholds these tenets of people's ability to choose what they read. One of the questions we ask each person when we hire them at the library is we share the freedom to read policy, and we ask them if they can abide by that, because it is so central to what we do here and what we believe people have the right to access here, that we include it before we even hire someone to come in and work at our desks, no matter what their job is. So we take great care, but we also have systems in place to help the community, help us shape our collection, because we are looking to be reflective of the community we serve, and we are looking to meet their needs and their desires. But that does not mean only one person's needs or desires. It is a beautiful combination of everyone here in Kenosha. And so we take that into great consideration. We have policies and forms in place where if people want to file a complaint or ask us to reconsider material, we have processes there where they're able to do so. Our director received the complaints about this title specifically, and specifically the request that we reconsider the selection. And she very clearly made a statement that we were not going to turn away from this book, not only because there's no reason for us to do so based on the opinions of a small portion of our community, but also because we should be engaging in these topics and these difficult conversations. And libraries are a place, and Kenosha Public Library prides itself on being a place that is open for that sort of conversation and exploration. Our strategic promises for many years have included inspiring learning, strengthening neighborhoods, and keeping you curious. And there is no curiosity without conflict.
Ooh, that's a line. I like that one. So with the rest of that majority, when you saw their responses, I guess, what did that mean to you when you saw the community's responses and feelings flowing through the book discussions and other events that happened surrounding this book?
Yeah, it was much like, imagine what it feels like when you are graduating from high school and your whole family's in the crowd cheering for you, right? That sort of warmth and pride that comes from knowing that not only was your work seen, but that you were doing the right thing. And I have to share that I was just blown away by the outpouring of love from the community. People were showing up to our board meetings to show their support. People were stopping after every program to share their support and their great pride that the library was moving forward, even in the faces of challenges here and nationally. We've seen an increase in book challenges. I've received so many cards and letters and phone calls from people who were just so grateful to get the opportunity to stop and reflect and participate. I've had great conversations with people who went in thinking that they were going to read this book and hate it, thinking that they were going to find what people were saying was offensive or obscene in these books. And instead, they came out the other side having a different understanding for a life experience that they themselves could never live. So it was just such an honor and such a great opportunity to get to be a part of this organization and lead it in a new way for myself and my role, but also to build our team around it and to get them excited, to introduce our partners to these thoughts. Everything we did was with such great care and intention, and to see the community respond to that was just really edifying.
Wow. So, I mean, hearing that, would you say the big read, the NEA big read from this year was successful for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Not only were we just thrilled to return to an in-person big read. So our last big read was in 2020. We had celebrated Lab Girl by Hope Jahren, and we had plans to be in person, but as we all know, 2020 went nothing as planned for anybody. So we switched very quickly to virtually and still had a wonderful turnout. But getting to gather the community members together again to talk, to share, to experience, and to hear from each other was such a special opportunity. And I really think that it was undeniably a success.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that the last big read was done completely virtually.
Completely virtually, right?
And so, seeing people see each other that probably some people probably hadn't even really come out for anything still, even in 2023.
Absolutely. And to have events that we know generally draw a larger crowd, you know, so we had the opportunity to hear from people who had not gotten to be in like group discussions like this and who hadn't been able to explore some of the topics we explored. So, you know, we had programs on redlining, we had programs about jazz, we explored the Harlem Renaissance and the history of librarianship, and there was all sorts of things that we got to dive into. And people were just thrilled to join us and be able to not only be with us as their public library, who is always, you know, welcoming and looking to have them here, but to be with their community members. It really cemented for me that one of our greatest honors and privileges as the public library for Kenosha is that we get to develop spaces of belonging that people can return to even after being away.
Yeah. Was there still a virtual component for this big read?
Yeah, so we had some of our programs that we did do virtually. Part of that was the availability of the speakers. Part of that was making sure that we were being accessible, because we know that not everyone's ready to come back to large events, not everyone's able to come back to events, and so we wanted to make sure that we were still offering the most service to the most people. So we had a total of 4 virtual programs throughout the entire big read. That included our keynote, which was an evening conversation with the author, Yaa Gyasi, herself. So Yaa lives in Brooklyn and was so gracious and so wonderful to join us virtually for an hour-long conversation. And it was just such a delight to get to speak with her and get to know her a little bit more.
Wow. So the author joined and got to talk to Kenoshans directly about the book and experiences with that book. Yeah. Was there anything that she mentioned that that seemed to resonate with Kenoshans?
Absolutely. So she started off by offering to do a reading of her work. And I don't know if you've ever gotten to experience an author reading their own work, but there's something truly magical about hearing those words come to life. And then the rest of the program was really just conversational, where the community was able to ask questions and we facilitated those questions. But Yaa shared with us where she was when she wrote this book and the things she experienced. I think my greatest takeaway was that she views reading as a sacred art and encourages everyone to carve out time for that sacredness for themselves. And that was just such a powerful way to reflect on the power of what we do at the library every day.
Yeah, so I got one more question on the big read.
Absolutely.
Do you think you'll do it again?
Oh, for sure. So we generally take a year off, and part of that is to, one, recoup. It is a large undertaking. There is a lot of planning, a lot of work, and we did roll our big read right into our summer programs this year, so we didn't really get a pause in between. But I'm certain that in 2024, we'll see the return of the NEA Big Read to Kenosha Public Library.
And if you're just joining us, this is WGDD's Community Matters with your host, Xander Miller. I've been speaking with Brandy Cummings, the head of community programs and partnerships with Kenosha Public Library. And so, Brandy, I want to, instead of looking at the past and what happened with the NEA Big Read, I want to look forward. It's June, it's summer, and I've been seeing pushes for summer reading. So I mean, summer reading has been, it seems like it's been a library staple everywhere,
forever.
No matter where,
right.
where you're at. So what is summer reading for Kenosha Public Library?
Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree. Summer reading and story time seem to be like the traditional, you're going to find it at every library. But I think we do them both really well. So here for Kenosha Public Library, we are trying something completely new for summer reading this year. We have our children's programs that we always do. So there's options for birth to age 5, 5 to age 12, 12 to 19. And those each involve different tracks where we're tracking how long children are reading. And part of that is because we know that as children are coming out of the school year and entering into summer, we know that they're going to fight something that's called the summer slide. And what that is, for those who might not be familiar, it's the idea that when you leave a learning institution for a length of time, you regress with some of the skills that you've learned. So you're sliding backwards, essentially. So in order to help combat that. We focus on the time we ask children to read, so that way we're building that routine of reading and that habit. We know that building habits is really essential. And then, of course, there's prizes, which helps to incentivize it for kids. And I can tell you that it doesn't matter if the prize is a printed bookmark or a sticker or a Kindle. Kids are excited for whatever they get. But this year, our team really has gone above and beyond. For each child that finishes their summer reading log, not only receives a book of their choice, they get to come in and pick a book, but they also get to come in and enter their name in for a drawing for a gift card to a local establishment. So whether you have that ice cream loving kid who's looking to get over to Scoops, or you have an artist on your hands that wants to paint at Alpaca Arts, or a heavy reader that wants to hit up Blue House Books, we've got you covered. For adults this year, we are taking some inspiration from what we did with our winter reading challenge, and we are, rather than tracking how long people are reading or asking them to read certain types of things, we're just asking our adults to log how many pages they read throughout the summer. And ultimately, our goal is to enter into a 1 million page challenge with the entire community. So we're asking everyone to keep track of how many pages they're reading, and then we will get to celebrate together once we cross that $1 million page threshold.
I wish it could be $1 million.
I would love to cross a $1 million threshold, but that's a different topic for a different library program, I'm sure.
So this million page challenge, how did you come up with a million pages?
You know, I like to, if I'm going to fail, I like to fail at something spectacular. And what better way to set a goal than something that seems completely unattainable? So 1 million just feels like this giant number that seems unfathomable to us, right? Mm-hmm. When we each think about $1 million, that seems like something we'll never have, or at least for those of us in public service life, right? And when we think about, a million anything, a million cards, a million cars, like that just feels like a number we can't physically fathom. So the idea of a million pages really sprung from the fact that our libraries contain such a multitude of stories, such a multitude of narratives, such a multitude of information, that there's easily a million pages in each one of our libraries, maybe just even in one range or book stack itself. And so by combining the power of our community, by drawing us together in this way, we're able to all contribute to a goal. So we will also be calculating the pages that the children have read over the summer to add in, so that way they're part of this as well. But really, we wanted to shoot for the moon, and that just happened to end up with, a bunch of extra zeros after it.
So I'm curious, with the million pages, what can people even read to get there? Because, yeah. I mean, not everyone reads books. I know I read so much manga, so many webtoons.
Yeah.
What, does all that count?
It absolutely does. And so one thing you'll notice at the Kenosha Public Library is that the theme of our summer reading programs has been everybody reads for years. And that's because we know that literacy just isn't one thing. We know that reading isn't just one format, right? As a child, I was a ferocious reader. I could sit down with a stack of books. I wrote my fourth grade book report on The Hobbit. The librarian at that time told me there's no way I could read it. And I read it front to back, got it A++. Thank you, Ms. Skirsky. still have that in a box somewhere. Super proud of that. But we know that it's not just that. And the way that stories are told now, they're told in so many different ways. So like manga and webtoons. And we look at our graphic novels, audiobooks. All of that is still ingesting story and the power of story. So all of it gets to count, which is really lovely. Magazines, newspapers. We have gentlemen who come in here every morning and they have their own little social agreement about who gets what paper when, and they rotate them, and it's almost like watching a ballet, except it's with the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. And it's just fascinating to me to see all the ways we engage with reading that we don't think about day to day. We don't think about the fact that as an architect, you're reading pages upon pages of plans. As a musician, you're reading sheets upon sheets of music. all of this counts. All of this is literacy, and all of this is really important to not only the health of your mind, but the health of your spirit, which is really part of our goal.
Okay. And so I'm getting that we've got a lot of there's a lot of challenges that you're going for, encouraging reading, whatever reading, everybody is meant to read. But I guess, why is this so important for the library? Aside from being a repository for books, why is it so important that everyone is involved in reading and kids get involved in reading? You know, summer slide, maybe fight that another way, but why is this reading and literacy this important for the community?
Yeah, so there's probably a million answers to that question, but the one that leaps to top of mind for me is something that our director, Barb Bratton, has said in the entire 9 years I've known her, and that's that the power of story changes lives. And when we think about the power of story, if we think about like the hero's journey, right? We think about how each of us is living a life onto our own, but in the midst of a community. We think about what our experiences shape in us, how we view the world, how we create stories about other people and their intentions. And so we think about how important story is to inspiring us, to comforting us, to keeping us curious and drawing out new skills and new passions and new excitements, to building something familiar. You know, there's so much that comes down to how story intertwines and weaves through and builds our lives, our day-to-day lives. And so when we try to emphasize the importance of reading to our community, it's not just because we'd like to see books leave our shelves, which of course we would. We work really hard. Our librarians do an amazing job to make sure that we are curating a collection that's appealing and informational and engaging for our community. And we definitely want people to come in and use the stuff. But ultimately, we want them to have the best version of themselves. And you can find that in those stories. You can find your passion, you can find your curiosity, you can find what pushes you to move forward. Whole faith communities are based on stories, you know? The oral stories of different cultures that get passed down time after time, like our human existence is story. And we get to celebrate that. And in the summer, we just try to make it a little louder.
And that's really, I mean, that's summer reading here, but that's summer reading everywhere.
Everywhere, right.
So maybe, you know, you're listening from somewhere far away, some out of Wisconsin even, you know, for some reason you're listening to this radio show for the community here, and summer reading is at your local library. Would you say go ahead and do it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that there's no wrong time to engage with reading, and especially when you can also have a little fun, right? Who doesn't need a little levity in their lives? You know, we have been living through really hard times, and not just in the last 3 years, but just as society, we're dealing more and more with this sort of reckoning of trying to marry a past that was full of people trying to do what they could with the knowledge that they had then, and now this influx of information, and how do we catch up, and how do we shift our standards and what's acceptable in society? So how do you take care of yourself? You know, there's a real opportunity for people to look at reading as a time to practice self-care, as a time to learn more about themselves, whether you're looking at, you know, the work of Brené Brown, who I happen to love, or maybe you're learning to build a new skill, learn a new language. There's all this opportunity for reading to really serve more than just a functional or practical service.
And of course, the stories that people are gaining from that, being using it as a relaxation, a way to connect without necessarily connecting.
Yeah.
I mean, reading was important during the pandemic, but even as we are, you know, we don't wear masks everywhere we go, we don't necessarily do all the spacing, even afterwards, reading is still something that's vastly important.
Absolutely.
For storytelling, imaginations, all of that.
Right.
And so, is there a pr- practical portion of that for this community here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when we look at what studies and science show us about specifically adults engaging in reading, I could talk about children and what science shows us about, you know, children's reading. And I'm sure many people in our community have heard about how poor our third grade reading levels are and what that is an indicator of. It's an indicator of crisis, you know. But when we talk about adults reading, it's really an indicator of opportunity and freedom. Because if you can't read or you don't read, you miss out on so many things this world has to offer you, but also we miss out on what you have to offer the world. And so it's just so desperately important that as adults, we don't lose that drive. We don't lose that ability to engage in either imaginative play, if we're reading, you know, fiction, or reading a fantasy novel or a sci-fi novel, but also that curiosity and that learning, that constant growth. You know, you're firing synapses in your brain, you're building healthy minds, but you're also building resilience and empathy and problem solving, the ability to enter into a scenario and see things from other people's point of view, which I think we could all agree this world could use a lot more of people being able to have empathy and act that out in real time. And all of that, all of that can come from engaging with more reading.
Wow. So it sounds, and the word I'm focusing on that you mentioned here is that freedom portion.
Yeah.
That reading and freedom can be tied together.
Absolutely.
So it goes back to when we were talking about the big read earlier, when you mentioned that you don't want, like, an individual's feelings about a book to limit someone else's in reading that book. And even though summer reading isn't necessarily, like, you know, it's not tied to the big read, it's not tied to the same book, the same principles applying here. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll let you in on a little secret. Those principles really apply to almost everything we do at your public library. We are constantly trying to find ways to instill in our community the idea that lifelong learning, curiosity, care for the people around you, you know, strengthening your neighborhood, that sort of thing, in any way that we can. And the idea that we as adults, as Americans, as humans, have the right to figure out what it is we want to learn more about. We have the privilege to be curious and have information at our fingertips. We're always trying to help inspire that and help encourage that growth, that personal growth, professional growth, economic growth. Again, all of it just keeps coming back to building a habit and a love for reading.
Yeah, and imagine, you know, economic growth. Whenever someone's using a computer, they have to read something, right?
Absolutely. We read so much every day that we take for granted, mm-hmm. whether you're reading stop signs or you're reading instructions. I just, you know, as a homeowner, I'm constantly doing home projects, and I'm sure everyone else here can feel the same pain. It just never ends. It never ends. But I'm constantly reading, you know, what is the best, you know, finish for this? What are the environmental effects if I choose to seal my fence with this sort of sealant? You know, what sort of plant do I want to put out here, and how does it grow well? All of that, where I'm not thinking about the actual act of reading, I'm thinking about the outcome, mm-hmm. right, of the action I want to take. In order for me to do that, in order for me to feel confident, in order for me to feel safe in my choices, I need to be able to read, and I need to be able to comprehend. You know, in order for me to sit down and have conversations with you, with my other colleagues, with people in this community, I need to be able to articulate myself, but I also need to be able to have an understanding of other people's points of view, and I can get exposure to that through reading.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it when I, you know, purchased a home recently. I didn't go online. I kind of got a book for the little home projects to work on rather than going online for it, which you can do.
Absolutely.
That's still reading too.
It is. It is. We read menus. You know, we read health reports. I had the privilege of many years ago serving on the board of the Kenosha Literacy Council, who really focuses on helping to build literacy skills in adult learners here in Kenosha. And one of the things I took away from that was this conversation I had with one of their students about how she finally felt confident navigating her children's doctor's appointments. You know, can you imagine the relief, the freedom, the excitement that comes from feeling confident enough in your ability to be able to communicate? And that, again, comes back to this fundamental skill set and habit and love of reading.
Wow. So I want to kind of talk more in depth, because we've had this very nice philosophical level. Reading is great.
Yes.
And wonderful.
It
and fun.
Is.
All true and
very much
building our, you know, love of society, freedom, all those things. But I want to kind of get an outline of what people can look forward to throughout the months of summer reading.
Yeah.
So what's going on in June?
Oh my gosh, what isn't going on in June? So Kenosha Public Library is definitely ramping up for the summer, as we often do. And we are seeing wonderful programs, everything from outdoor exploration with our partners at Hawthorne Hollow to a Bluey Bonanza for families with young children, or if you're like me, an auntie who just loves Bluey and Bingo, super excited about that program. We've got a lot of wonderful crafting programs that we have in place, our In Stitches program and our In the Making, which again helps to build that love of creation and art that's mirrored with and married to the idea of reading. There's so much going on, but we do also want to make sure that all of our summer reading participants know, and our entire community knows, that they are more than welcome to join us on September 1st at the Southwest Library for our end of summer reading carnival. We are turning the parking lot into a giant party where we will be hopefully celebrating the success of our 1 million page mark by September 1st. So it'll be a great time, and I can't wait to see the community show up and celebrate together.
Yeah, and so how does someone sign up for summer reading?
Because
after hearing all of that, how couldn't you, right?
Right. I didn't even mention the prizes for adults, but there are prizes for grown-ups too. So signing up for summer reading couldn't be simpler. You can stop into whichever one of your neighborhood libraries that is your preference. We have four throughout our great city. You could also stop into our bookmobile or our book trucks when you see them out on the road. Or you can go online to mykpl.info/summer reading, where you can find the online forms for both the adult program and the Beanstack app for the kids programs.
Yeah, and so that was mykpl.info/summer reading.
All one word, yep.
And so I think we're gonna last area to talk about, really, with the summer reading. If we get to 1 million pages.
Yes.
What happens?
Well, we celebrate. We celebrate big and we celebrate loud, and it's definitely bragging rights. There's one other library I've seen in the nation that have tried a 1 million page challenge, and that was out in Denver, which is a much larger city than Kenosha. But I have great faith that we'll get to show that up and prove that Kenosha is not only a great city of wonderful neighbors and burgeoning businesses, but also a community full of lifelong learners and readers.
Okay. Any last words you'd like to say about summer reading, even the big read, if we want to approach that again?
Yeah, I think I'd like to take a moment to just thank the community for continuing to support what the public library does. We really do strive to be such a reflection of all of our neighbors and all of our friends here in this community, and what we do and how we do it, it really depends on you showing up and being a part of it. So thank you for being a part of this. Thank you for engaging in summer reading, and thank you for continuing to love your public library.
Well, thank you, Brandy, for coming on the show with us. This has been WGTD's Community Matters. I'm Xander Miller. I've been talking with the wonderful Brandy Cummings from Kenosha Public Library. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you have a nice rest of your day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music.